swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, Frank Lee, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 132. If you're listening on drop day, it is September 20th. We are getting down to the end of the season. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. We're recording late, 11:40 p.m. on a Thursday night. It is just me and Sammy here for you guys today. No Pat, and Joe is doing producing for WEEI postgame Patriots. We're recording late because we watched the Red Sox play a bad game in which they had no offense, and then watched the Patriots play a bad game in which they had probably even less offense than the Red Sox, if we're being honest. And the Red Sox scored zero runs, so that says a lot. But before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars, helps us out so much. And as always, on YouTube, on the WEEI channel, Play Tessie playlist there. You can search for all our videos there. And as always, on the socials, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. So, yeah, I mean, I said it right there. Sox, no offense. We'll stick to the Red Sox. The Patriots are also very, very uninteresting. And Celtics get started soon, and they'll be more fun than the Red Sox are at this moment, and the Patriots will be for the remainder of their season. But in this series with the Rays, they scored five total runs. They got shut out in the third game. They won the second game, in which they scored two runs, but they got immaculate inning and struck out 14 times in that game. The offense is just, it's completely, completely dead. And I mean, it's tough because, like, going into the third game of the series, it was like, if the Red Sox win this game, oh, they're three games back of a playoff spot. And everyone was talking about, oh, the Twin series would matter. The only issue was, like, we'd been dreaming up that three games back of the Twins and entering that series only three back for a while. But the one contingency of that was there had to be no teams in the middle, because you want to be three back of them so you can control your own destiny. But it doesn't really work when you have the Mariners and the Tigers in front of you. And as it stands right now, the Sox are four games back of both the Twins and the Tigers. They're two games back of the Mariners, and there's nine to go. So yeah, that's not happening. Sammy, you give me your reaction to that, and I know you agree it's done, but just give me your thoughts on this offense. I'm going to go find the playoff odds while you do that.
Yeah, really weird. I remember right after the deadline, right around that time, we were talking about how the offense has been good in terms of runs scored. However, we were all concerned a bit about the strikeouts, and I think right now it's just a monsoon of whiffs and bad takes, and just it's ugly. People are saying they've given up. I don't know if they've, you know, mentally given up, but from the naked eye, it just looks like there's no approach. Duran today, first two at bats, just jumping out there, two pop-ups, pretty much the same at bat twice. Just frustrating. And not to point him out, it's everybody. Willy Abreu striking out at a ridiculous rate. He's had a really good year. Now he's not even, in my opinion, not even close to winning the AL Rookie of the Year anymore. He's completely fallen off.
Agreed.
You know, Casas improving a little. Devers still looks pretty rough out there. Story looks good. If you're looking for a positive, there you go. Trevor Story looks okay. Not great, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, so I did pull up the playoff odds. It is at 0.7% chance to make the postseason. So that's where we're at. But no, it's a good point that you bring up Duran, because the offense obviously has been cold for a while, but it died. It truly died in that moment. And I guess Devers should be looped in there too, but Duran and Devers both just fell off a cliff completely offensively. Devers still has – he's less than a week away from hitting the one-month marker since he's hit a home run, and Duran has an OPS in the 500s in September. So, I mean, it's just – yeah, obviously when your two best players go ice cold and the rest of your team, as you said, Sammy, like striking out a crazy amount. Like Red Sox stats had a – had an unbelievable stat on Sedan Rafaela the other day. I forget the exact date, but it's been pretty much a month since he's walked, and he's hitting in the 100s, obviously, and just striking out at a 40% clip and swinging and missing at 60% of the pitches that he sees outside the zone. So he's swinging and missing outside the zone more than he's taking balls, which is really alarming. And obviously, you know, for a rookie, he's at the end of the year in his first full season. They call it the rookie wall for a reason. So, like, obviously it is what it is. But that's a wart in his game that's pretty well documented. And Cora had a weird quote where he was like, yeah, like, I'm not saying teams figured out something that we knew. But, yeah, like, so, yeah, I mean, clearly there's lots of problems offensively, I think more so than we're showing earlier in the year. Do you think it's like, is it a case to you of a team that just, you know, fell off a cliff at the end, or is this deep rooted in something that needs serious digging in the offseason to you?
It's such a hard question. I really don't know. I think my best guess would be it's just too many strikeouts, and you address it in the offseason, like you said. Like, you go up and down the lineup, there's a lot of talented bats in the lineup. Like we said, they score a lot of runs, top 10 so far in Major League Baseball. And they'll probably end somewhere around that unless they continue this unbelievably cold streak. But point being, these guys can score runs, but still up and down the lineup all year long, just too many strikeouts from your key guys. And that's the tough part, because you can't move on from a lot of these guys. They're locked in, like Rafaela locked in, Devers locked in, but they're high K guys. Same with Story. So I think the only way you fix this is by changing some of the fringe personnel and adding, you still got to add a right-handed bat at some point. Like, we've been talking about this. We've been talking about this since before the season started, that they were short a right-handed bat. They didn't really.
And we said that when we thought Story was going to play the whole year and be good.
Yeah, true. That's a great point. We thought that even with Story, they might need another right-handed bat. We still do. So yeah, it has to be the offseason. I mean, I'm not one of those people who points to the hitting coach and says, like, oh, you got to fire Pete Fatsy. Like, what do you think? He's not telling them, hey, guys, we're striking out too much. Let's put the ball in play. Let's be a little bit more aggressive here. Let's change our approach. Like, it's the personnel, man. These are all guys who have struck out their whole careers, you know, Major League Baseball or not, other leagues, wherever, other than, like, Yoshida, maybe. They're all high K-rate guys. So
it is just him. It is just him. I was actually doing a little bit of playing around, and this was like a week ago, so it's outdated now, but the numbers still stand. Every single guy in the lineup that's playing regularly is around 25th percentile or worse, and it gets way worse than that, of course, but 25th percentile or worse in K percentage, and Yoshida's literally the only one that doesn't fit that mold, which is scary, because you and I have shared the opinion probably since close to day one of the season, that they should probably look to offload and dump that Yoshida deal in the offseason. But the obvious scary part about that is, like, as much as we talk about them needing more right-handed hitting and better right-handed hitting, if Yoshida's the odd man out, and with all these good young left-handed hitters they have coming up, I still think he is. The scary thing is, if those guys strike out at even average clips in the bigs, you're going to have a lineup completely full of guys that do that. And it's just, it's hard when you have so many good promising bats, both at the major league level and coming. It's not like you're going to have to be really choosy with who you choose to bring into this group.
Yeah, I agree. And there's also not too many spots you can choose to add these guys. And I don't know, you could do that Yoshida spot, which I guess you just call the DH role. And then you have O'Neill's a free agent, so you could bring him back or replace him with someone who's more contact oriented. It's another guy, good power, lots of strikeouts. So
let's talk about that because that this has been, I think it's been an area that a lot of people have, I guess, a lot of people are on the borderline with. I think people don't quite know what they want the qualifying offer with O'Neill, whether the Red Sox should offer it. It's going to be about $21 million for the one-year deal. And obviously, if you don't know, the way that works is if he accepts the one-year $21 million deal, then the Red Sox have him on a one-year $21 million deal. And if he turns it down, then if he signs with another team, the Red Sox would get a compensatory draft pick after the first round. So I think people are torn on, A, whether they think the Red Sox should offer it, because I think there are a lot of people that obviously, $21 million would be a little high for Tyler O'Neill, even though he's had a really nice year, really good year. But $21 million certainly would be high. So a lot of people are torn on whether they want the Red Sox to do that. Obviously, you know, if you don't do that, he's going to get a multi-year deal. And then obviously if the Red Sox offer it, I think there is a group out there that would want him to accept it, understanding that the Red Sox do not have a lot of right-handed production at the plate. And out of the prospects coming, the only star prospect that's coming that's right-handed is Christian Campbell. Meyer, Anthony, Teal, all lefties. So I'm curious, Sammy, I know that we've talked about it a lot, but like obviously, you know, weeks, 2 weeks worth of games, however many games they've played since we've last talked about it, it could change things. So curious, where do you stand on the O'Neill thing right now?
I'm pretty torn because like you said, they need the right-handed bat and they need power. And O'Neill this year, he's been great. There's no denying it. He OPS in the 900s, 30 plus, what's he at? 31, 32 home runs at this point. Like he's been very valuable for the Red Sox. The problem is he strikes out a lot and he's rough against righties. And I know that more importantly, he hits lefties, but still like if he's going to be your everyday guy, it's a tough fit. It's not really the giving him the qualifying offer. I think he's well worth that. I think we all agree he's worth that money on a 1 year deal. Who cares? It's just like, are they better off bringing O'Neill back or are they better off moving in a different direction and getting a different corner outfielder / DH who's more contact oriented? Because right now, I mean, Tyler O'Neill is driving in himself more than his teammates. And, you know, 30 plus home runs is great, but at the end of the day, like they need guys on base. And if he's just hitting solo shots, it's not as effective. It looks good on paper, but the point is to win games. So it's just a matter of like, can you get enough on base kind of contact oriented guys in that second base role? Because that's the other obvious open spot. Can you fill that with Christian Campbell? Can he quickly become acclimated to major league pitching? Is he going to have strikeout issues at the major league level? Or do you go with a guy like Mydroth, who's a great contact OBP, gets a lot of walks down in AAA? He could be your second base guy. And then you can maybe stomach bringing back Tyler O'Neill and living with the strikeouts and keeping that power. So it's really hard. And I hate to ride the fence on an issue like this, but we still got a lot of time. So right now I lean yes, bring him back, but yeah, I mean, it's not firm or anything.
Are you saying you're under the assumption that if they offer him the qualifying offer that he's going to take it?
Yeah, I think he'll take it. Probably like, let's say like 65% confidence rate that he'll take it. Like,
kind of where
it
I'm
sounds
at
like
too.
He wants to be here. The Jamai interview kind of swayed me a bit too. It sounded like he really wanted to be here. And a guy who's a pending free agent, you know, he has no reason to say that. Like he doesn't have to say that at all. He could still get the same amount from the Red Sox. But to say that makes me think it's actually true. Like he's got no reason to lie. So yes, I do think he'd accept it. I think obviously he'd prefer a multi-year deal. But if I'm the Red Sox, I can't justify giving him a multi-year deal. As much as I like the guy in the game, it's just
no. That's where you get me too. Because I'm not wavering. I'm still fully entrenched in the give Tyler O'Neill the qualifying offer boat. I'm okay with them overpaying a little bit as long as it's a 1 year deal. I think your options for right-handed bat production on the market improve the year after. I think if you listen to the show, you know I'm obsessed with Vlad Jr. I think it's unrealistic to expect the Red Sox to pay him, but I'm going to hold out hope. But with O'Neill, it's interesting because you bring up the points. I got the numbers up here. You're second percentile in strikeout percentage, fifth percentile swing and miss. Like it's been a problem for the Red Sox. Too many strikeouts, and Tyler O'Neill is at the center of that. But then you look at obviously he's been their best home run hitter. He has a swing that's built for Fenway, crushes left-handed pitching, which the Red Sox obviously cannot afford to get worse at. Barrel percentage, 98th percentile, hard hit percentage, 90th percentile, swings the bat as hard as ever, 93rd percentile in bat speed. Like the dude just hits. And it's the tough thing is that, you know, obviously is he's slowed down speed-wise as a guy who was in the 98th percentile sprint speed at one point in his career. Now he's in the 55th
what?
Percentile.
Was he really? He was yeah, that dude. Fast?
Dude, I knew he was that speed. Fast.
Oh my God. I didn't know he was crazy. 98th percentile. I would have told you like 85th.
Yeah, dude. Right. He was that fast, but it's not – he's slowing down, so he's 55th this year. You can expect it to take another step back next year. Obvious defense, that's a multi-time gold glover, but now by outs above average, he's in the 14th percentile. But the good news is if you're to bring him back, it's probably going to be mainly in a DH role just because of the outfielders you got coming. Like you still got Duran here, you still got Willier here, still got Sedan here, and you got Roman Anthony coming. So you're probably going to maybe deal one of those guys. That's probably a question for another day. Maybe we talk about that on tomorrow's show a little bit deeper into that discussion. But to me, I know the swing and miss is a problem, but they need right-handed bats that can hit left-handed pitching. They need guys who can use the monster to their advantage, and he uses it to his advantage by soaring balls a mile over it. I just think it would hurt. I think if you lost Tyler O'Neill, I don't trust them to bring in another right-handed bat that can hit lefties the way he can and play every day. Because like we talk about, like Ref Snyder and Romy Gonzalez have both been really good this year against lefties for the most part. But to get another full-time guy that can hit lefties and play every day, like I just don't – like unless they're – another thing we could talk about another time was that whole Alex Bregman thing. We'll have plenty of time to talk about him in the future, the near future, because the offseason really is coming. But let me read you this Craig Breslow quote on the Tyler O'Neill thing, because it's good that we're bringing this up now. So Breslow on WEI, good plug there, said – the opportunities to upgrade the deficiencies of this team are pretty well documented. We need additional starting pitching depth. We need to take a hard look at our bullpen. We obviously have Tyler O'Neill right now, but he's earned the right to explore free agency. And the right-handed power play that plays so well at Fenway is going to be a massive hole that we're going to need to figure out how to fix. So I do like that his head's in the right place, that if Tyler O'Neill does get away, that they know that they're going to need power from that side. And it's not just going to be expecting Trevor Story to break out for like the gazillionth year in a row. And it's not just expecting Sadon Rafaela to take some massive leap. And it's not just expecting Christian Campbell to be some superstar rookie, when even guys like Jackson Holliday and Jackson Churio obviously turned it on late, but at the beginning he was terrible too. So I'm glad that that's going to be a focus, but to me, the easiest and simplest way that also keeps flexibility and you get a guy that knows how to hit at Fenway and can hit for your team and has proven it, is to just keep Tyler O'Neill. And if it's an overpay for a one-year deal, then it's an overpay. And if he turns it down, fine. I am so happy to take that draft pick. Because you're right, Sammy, I'm not giving him multi-years.
Yeah, by the way, you talk about hitting left-handed pitching. O'Neill with a 1,188 OPS against lefties this year. That's good.
Pretty good.
It's also like hitting. I know batting average, roll your eyes, 315, pretty consistent. Yeah, about Breslow's comments, I'm really, really going to struggle this offseason, you know, taking in these quotes and making anything of them. Already last year, I remember you guys felt like you guys would be like, oh, here's Sammy with the same response to all the quotes. Like, to me, they all mean close to nothing. And that one is like, yeah, dude, yes, you would need to replace the 30 plus home runs from the one consistent right-handed bat you had all season. Thank God you're aware of that, Craig Breslow. Like, I would hope that he's aware of that. So I guess credit for his head being in the right place and not just saying, yes, let's rely on Christian Campbell or Trevor Story again, like you mentioned, Gordo. But fuck's sake, man, I'm so dreading. I can't stand, like, I like some of the moves they make. I can't stand listening to these guys talk. I want to bang my head against the wall every time they talk. It's just the same, like the most broad answers you can imagine. And they can mean whatever you want them to mean. You can make of them whatever you wish. Like, do you want Craig Breslow to sound like a liar? Sure. Cool. You can say he's lying. You want him to sound like, oh yeah, his head's on straight. That's great. You could talk yourself into that too. They're so broad. And that's why I get so frustrated. But this one's kind of a nothing burger. I'm just mentally prepping myself to just rage the first time, probably one of the ownership guys, if they talk this time around, probably will. I just got to keep my head on straight, not get too angry.
Oh no, it's going to be bad. Like but the thing is, I feel like they're going to be so careful. Like we're all waiting for this end of season press conference. Like that's where you get like a lot of the quotes that kind of build like that. I mean, they got the full throttle one at the Breslow presser. So it wasn't the end of year presser, but like those press conferences are where you get the meat that kind of drives the conversation for the offseason. But I agree, Sammy. I'm not going to take – that's the thing, is you can't take any of the quotes to mean that action will happen, because action takes money or sacrifice in terms of prospects. And sometimes you just aren't willing to make that sacrifice in terms of the prospects, and sometimes you have an owner that doesn't want to spend. And in this case, I think it's probably pretty likely that they still have an owner that – doesn't want to spend. I think them cutting payroll in the lower levels of the front office and and firing people and asking people who want to remain in the organization to take pay cuts. I think that's a bad sign. So I agree. Spending wise, I'm not getting my hopes up, and I'm going to try to not read into the quotes. But what I will take away from this is that at least he understands that the need is there. Maybe he doesn't have the financial resources to pay the right guy to fix it, but at least he understands that the need is there, because it's a need that I think you and I and Pat talked about a ton last offseason, and they didn't address it, and they didn't really ever talk about it. It didn't feel like they thought there was a need there, but now they know.
But why did it take them that long? Isn't that alarming? Like, why didn't they address it? Even at the deadline, you could have done a little bit more. Danny Jansen, really? I know we all talked ourselves into it. Maybe that was a smart ad for like a week there, but let's be real. It's Danny Jansen. We were at Fenway when that happened. I remember we looked at each other like, what? Danny Jansen?
So, a little shocking at first.
I don't know, man. I'm just, I'm glad Craig Breslow realizes they need a right-handed bat.
But the scary thing, though, is it kind of feels a little bit like they're saying we need the right-handed bat if Tyler walks. Whereas it feels like they need to improve their offense against left-handed pitching, even if he doesn't. That said, I feel like a lot of these things could come together just because like they have so much left-handed talent that even if they're not going to pay a guy, like they're going to trade people, they're going to trade good players, they're going to trade good prospects, they're going to make moves that hurt, whether it be this offseason or next. You know, what they get for that, I don't know. But, like, when you send those guys out the door, you're going to have to balance the roster at some point. Like, Cora's talked about it plenty.
Do you think that O'Neill, Story, assuming he's healthy, Campbell, Wong, Rafaela, is that enough right-handed thump slash on base slash skill in general?
Well, you know my answer to that is no. But you know what? You know what I got to bring up here is another guy that Breslow talked about that we have not mentioned. You didn't mention him there even when you were talking about all the right-handed hitters the Red Sox have, is Vaughn Grissom, who...
Yes.
And I'm going to pull up Breslow's quote on him as well. Ah, crap, I just had it. All right, I got it. All right, so he was asked on WEI if he regrets the Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom trade. And he said, it's a fair question. There are 29 other teams that would benefit from Sale pitching at the front of their rotation. We would as well. I still believe that the trade can only be fairly judged and evaluated down the road. Grissom is a guy we're excited to have and will have for a long time. I don't think we saw what he's capable of doing over the course of a season. The Grissom we've seen over the last month or so in Worcester is much more indicative of the player he can be and the player that he will be here. But sure, it hurts that Sale is having such a successful season in another uniform, but I recognize that when you make these trades, there's always a possibility and his talent was never going to be questioned. So Breslow clearly sending a message that they very much still believe in Vaughn Grissom. And to, you know, we talked about Yoshida being kind of the only contact-oriented guy. Grissom, I mean, it is interesting to think about how different things could have been if Grissom was the good version of Grissom that clearly the Red Sox were hoping they were going to get. Because we talk about how this team has issues with contact hitting the ball. And we talk about, like, literally just making contact, not striking out. And then we talk about how many issues this team has with hitting left-handed pitching. Grissom being the good version of himself, it wouldn't have made them great at either of those things, but that's a guy you insert in the lineup and you feel confident if he's at his best in both of those spots and he plays every day. So obviously getting him back and him being, you know, a better version of himself would be huge. But again, that's something that's a little bit scary to count on, but they do have a few shots at this. It's like Grissom at second base. If that doesn't work, Campbell at second base. If that doesn't work, like Myron's Story, like there's a lot of different routes you can go, but obviously I'm sure they hope to get better production from Grissom next year.
Yeah. So regarding Breslow's quote, I'm going to do the thing again. My first thought is, what else could he have said? Because there's no world in which he goes like, I fucked this one up, boys. Sale looks great in Atlanta. Grissom stunk this year. That's on me. We really could have been a contender if we had an ace and I traded him away. So my apologies. He's never going to say that. So while I agree with what he said, I don't know how much stock I put into it. Not if I believe it or not, just how strong those words really are. But I do think that Vaughn Grissom is someone who should get an extended look and at least a shot at second base. I don't know how they're going to do it. I think there's a good chance that Christian Campbell is the guy moved in a trade, because I think the only way they're going to get an ace, which is the biggest need, is a trade. And I think Campbell has a ton of helium. So he might be gone and not an option for second base. If that is the case, then it's basically who? Grissom, Hamilton. Technically, he's in the mix. Mydroth. Am I forgetting anyone?
If you're talking about opening day, Marcelo and Story being your middle infield probably isn't on the table. But if you're talking about like the majority of next season, I think there's definitely an argument to be made that Meyer will play more than 50% of the
opening day. Just opening day, I'm talking, because it's so hard to tell with Meyer. Like, he hasn't even seen AAA pitching.
No, he won't. Struggle. He won't be opening day. No way.
Yeah,
he can't.
But opening day wise, I think those three guys are kind of like the three options right now. And who knows? I mean, they could make a move. Alex Bregman, you mentioned earlier, that could be the second baseman. He came up as like a middle infielder. Maybe they move him over from third. So I don't know, but they need a right-handed bat who makes contact and doesn't strike out, gets on base, and is, you know, ideally a good baseball player.
So question for you, in this world, let's say they, obviously it's unrealistic, but they don't trade anything and the roster is the same, I guess. What role do you see Grissom having by like midseason? Like, that's the thing. It's like you can look at it from an opening day perspective, but like, I get confused when I try to think, and obviously this is why a trade needs to happen. This is why, as you said, there's a good chance, I think, that Campbell could be the one to go. I agree with you on that, because I, like, even before this season, we were thinking, okay, like next year, if Marcelo is going to be in the majors, he is probably your shortstop and Story's your second baseman in that case. Yep. And if that's the case, where does Vaughn Grissom play? And if he performs, it's like, is he a utility guy? Even if he is a utility guy, like, how often is he going to be able to get in the lineup with the amount of talent you have in the outfield? Like, we were talking about left field before, but like, at this point, like, Sedan's your center fielder. You've locked him in financially. Like, that's your guy. Like, you got to stick to that. And Duran is your left fielder, and that has been your best player this season. So, like, obviously he's going to play every single day as he's done this year. So, like, when Meyer comes, like, I just don't even know. I don't think there's an answer to this unless there's something I'm missing. Like, if, especially if Campbell sticks around, like, there are too many guys. And with Vaughn Grissom in particular, it feels like there's just always been this uncertainty about where he goes. And I just don't know.
Yeah. There's also Romy and there's Sogard. Like, they've got decent org depth at second base. But there's just not one guy who's caught on yet. And I think we all expect Christian Campbell to be that guy if he stays. But if he doesn't, I would probably go with Vaughn Grissom. He's the guy with the pedigree, former top prospect. They traded a lot for him. The Red Sox are, for better or worse, they're a bit stubborn. So they've made a – investment's not the right word. They put a lot out there to get Vaughn Grissom. Chris Sale, that's not a small piece to move. So I think that hypothetically, if no trades happen, which I think is like close to impossible.
Yeah.
But if it were to happen, I would say – Grissom would probably be my guy right now to get that job to start.
But we'll say in August, Marcelo Meyer, you know, has hit AAA and like he's probably up way before August. Like, he'll probably be up in like May or June. Like, I what do you even do at that point? Like,
then you're thrilled, dude. At that point, you're thrilled. Yeah. You're like, crap, we got so much talent. That's a great problem to have. You know, so what? I don't know, man.
Guys get hurt. Like,
is Meyer coming up because he's had 250 at-bats and it's like he's not getting better or worse? Or is he coming up because he's had 100 at-bats and he's forcing his way up? He's hitting .427 and he's hitting tanks all over and playing great defense. Like, there's so much context that goes into it. It's so hard to answer right now. And I mean, we're in for a fun offseason. It's just there's gonna come a time at some point where Breslow is going to have to put on his big boy pants and make a big move. And we've yet to see it. I mean, I would say the Sale Grissom trade
that counts. Is
probably... Yeah, that's probably the biggest we've seen. But you could also just say that's a 35-year-old pitcher who hasn't been healthy in 2-3 years on an expiring deal for a young prospect that's blocked. So I wouldn't say that's a blockbuster. It's a significant, but we're yet to see
that's
the big,
a big
one.
Boy. Well, that's a big boy pants. And I would argue the Verdugo one, even though it's not a significant trade, it was a big boy pants move just because ballsy. Ballsy just sending him to the Yankees. He's shown that he's not afraid to do it. I obviously, like, again, he had a quote, and we texted about this. I don't have it in front of me, but where he basically said, "Our the success that we've had, you know, just growing guys and at the big league level has, like, you have fewer needs to fill, and like you can target more premium players when you have fewer needs to fill." And obviously, that's another quote where I'll go back to what you said before, which is like, obviously words are words, and what is he going to say? Like, we've heard this at the beginning of off seasons plenty. So take it with a grain of salt, but yeah, there is going to be so much to talk about this off season. Again, like, yeah, you're right. They're going to have to trade stuff. They're going to have to make big boy moves. And
we didn't even talk about the ace. I mean, the biggest need is to get like a real number one starting pitcher for the fucking second year in a row. We're saying this. So hopefully they actually do it this time.
Yeah. And like, you could do that. And like, it's just so frustrating. And like, we'll get to the preview in a sec, cause we are running a little high on time here. But the thing that they have so much farm depth and they have so much room under the tax line. It's just like, if you'd given these resources, this financial space and this amount of prospect depth to the Red Sox 10 years ago, like, they would trade for like Garrett Crochet and sign like Corbin Burns or Max Fried.
And talking about Soto too, we'd be talking right now.
Yeah.
When people mention like, well, the Red Sox should take a look at Soto, it's laughable to me.
It's a joke.
I tweeted the other day, get ready, Garrett Crochet, that's going to be my guy that I want the Red Sox to trade for. And I have like a million reasons why. And there were so many comments like, why don't they just sign Corbin Burns or Max Fried? I'm like, yeah, I agree. But it's not going to happen. If you've
been as fans, you'd obviously rather trade nothing to get a great pitcher than prospects who could be good to get a great pitcher. Like, obviously we would love for them to just sign Juan Soto, because who needs lefty righty when you're Juan Soto, and get Corbin Burns? Like, yeah, come on. Like, of course.
Red Sox, do it. Oh, Corbin Burns is going to not be that good at the end of that contract. Who cares? We're the Boston Red Sox. We can just buy another guy, buy his contract. Oh, we're so rich. We could just win every year, but they don't do that anymore. So,
no, you got to be realistic.
So
be realistic kind of sucks sometimes.
You want my honest opinion, and we'll get more into this in the offseason. I think they're going to sign like a number three starter.
Sean Manaea.
Not that bad.
He's had a great year. His stats this year are shocking.
Really? Sean Manaea?
Dude, yeah.
With the Mets, right?
Yeah, with the Mets. I think he's got like a 3.2 ERA this year, and he's a left-handed pitcher. Like,
oh my God. Okay, yeah, maybe this is the guy.
Dude, he's crazy.
Wait, how did he do this? He just like had a renaissance year. Okay, yeah. So, yes, maybe someone like that, like better than Pivetta, but not quite Tanner Houck. Like, I think it's going to be like the best would be maybe Jack Flaherty. And then we're like, okay, I guess this is cool. This means this is how we talk ourselves into it. We'd be like, well, this means they really believe in Houck and they think he's going to be the ace. And what if Bayo takes another step? And, you know, Lucas Giolito was number one not that long ago.
And they've got a good training staff, so they're going to be the first team that's going to be able to keep Jack healthy. Like, we'll be...
God, I'm so... this is going to suck. This is going to be painful.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited, though. We're going to have so many good podcasts this offseason. The people who've been listening to us since day one know that we truly do our cooking in the offseason. It gets fun. Yeah. But for the time being, let's definitely preview this definitely important series against the Twins. The series that was supposed to be important, but they are four games back and there are multiple teams in front of them, and the team does not score runs anymore and thus does not generally win games. So here we go. Twins are 80-73. They are 10-20 in their last 30. They've been begging the Sox to get back into this, and they have absolutely no interest in doing so. The team that does have interest in doing so is the team that's management, and yeah, their GM just completely gave up on them in the middle of the season. Jack Flaherty's old team, the Detroit Tigers, they sold at the deadline. Javi Baez goes out for the year. It doesn't matter. We're going to become the hottest team in baseball and just charge the Twins, who have completely just blown this wild card lead. Again, 10-20 in their last 30 games. They just dropped 3 of 4 to the Cleveland Guardians. We'll talk some pitching matchups here. First game, not sure. I think, yeah, Fitz has been announced. So Richard Fitz versus David Festa, who's got a 5.07 ERA in his 12 games this year. His last two starts are combined 7 2/3 innings, 6 earned runs. Second game, Cutter Crawford versus Pablo Lopez, who is one of the better arms in baseball. He's got a 3.84 ERA, so not necessarily his best full season, but he's got a 1.11 ERA in his last six starts. He had a 10 strikeout outing two starts ago. Third game, Nick Pivetta versus Zebby Matthews. Weird name. 6.3 ERA and seven career starts, but a lot of that was a two-inning, nine-run outing on the 31st against the Blue Jays. This guy is the number 81 prospect in baseball. So he's got name value, whatever. Hasn't happened at the big league level to this point, but obviously plenty of potential there. Hitters, Carlos Correa is finally healthy. And when he's played this year, he's got a 905 OPS. Byron Buxton just came off the IL. Is 4-for-18 with a home run in his five games since his return. Royce Lewis, you probably saw his insane start to the year. He was hitting everything out when he was healthy. He's still a good player, but it's only a 560 OPS in his last 25 games. So he's definitely hit a wall there. Kyle Farmer, 1054 OPS in his last 23 games. Matt Wallner, 906 OPS for the season and an 857 OPS in his last 27 games over the last month. I feel like no one talks about Matt Wallner. For whatever reason, like, people listening to the show probably never heard of Matt Wallner. He had a good year last year, too. Christian Vasquez is on this team, part-time player at this point, just a 379 OPS in his last 15 games. They got a couple of switch hitters to watch out for in Carlos Santana and Willie Castro. Honestly, looking at the offense and how guys have been playing, I don't quite understand how they're 10-20 in their last 30 games. But
weird team. By the way, Wallner is kind of like Ref Snyder reversed. He only hits righties. Like he absolutely cannot hit lefties. 660 OPS, but against righties, 969. So maybe that's why he doesn't get talked about too much. He's just kind of like a platoon kind of part-time guy. Like
it's more like a Willier. It's Willier though. He's better Willier because like he plays against the righties.
Yeah. He's kind of like Willier, but he's not really a prospect. He's almost 27. I don't know. He's like young Jock Peterson.
Yeah. So okay, Joe. As I said, Joe is producing for WEI Patriots postgame right now. So I'll give you the update right now. Series predictions. I got it right. Pat got it right. We correctly predicted 2 out of 3. Sox losing 2 out of 3. Sammy predicted them getting swept, and Joe predicted 2 out of 3 wins. So the score right now is Sammy with 16, Pat with 14, me with 11, and Joe with 10. Okay, I'm going to give you Joe's and Pat's predictions first. Joe is predicting the Sox to lose 2 out of 3, and Pat is predicting the Sox to win 2 out of 3. Sammy, you have this thing locked. Oh, no, you don't have it locked up. Pat got it right and you didn't. So Pat gained a game on you. So you know that Pat got first jab at it. He has Sox winning 2 out of 3. So what are you going to go with?
I was going to pick 2 out of 3 as well. But for the sake of the game, I'll switch it up. I'll go Red Sox win 1 out of 3. I think they win the first game and then don't win again. No. They never win the first game of a homestand.
That's true.
They're going to like beat Pablo Lopez on Saturday, right? That's the Saturday starter. Yeah. Yep. He's like their best starter by far. So they'll beat him because his team is stupid.
Okay. So Sammy takes 1 out of 3. I'm going to take 2 out of 3. The Sox are ice cold. The Twins are also ice cold and the pitching matchups are kind of favorable. I feel like we're about to hit that point where it's like so obvious that the games don't matter, that the Sox are actually going to start playing a little bit better. So, yeah, I mean, to be expected. So I'm going to go win-loss-win, beat David Festa and Zebby Matthews, who both have ERAs over 5. So, yeah, let's lock that in. We'll write this down so Joe can put it in the notes to keep track. Next, we've got Crystal Bomb. Just say it, Sammy.
Bomb it.
Crystal Bomb. So I got the point on the Tristan Casas home run. Nobody else got points. Sammy had Abreu. Pat had Duran. Joe had O'Neill. None of them went deep. So the score right now is Sammy at 23, me at 20, Pat at 9, and Joe at 6. So like I still have to kind of run the table. Like we're at the point where I have to win it every week and you have to lose it every week. And even then that just gets
you're
me
the Red Sox. Yeah, you're the Red Sox.
I have like that 0.7%, but it's not zero.
All right. I'm going.
Hold on. Let me give you their picks first.
Okay.
Pat took Story and Joe Joe took Romy. I feel bad because these guys are all right-handed pitchers, so I don't think Romy's going to play. But Joe took Romy. So honestly, he could pinch hit against the lefty, and it would be probably the GOAT pinch hit or the GOAT crystal bomb pick of all time if Joe gets this one.
All right, I'm going to go with Casas. He's going to put the nail in the coffin for this competition for me. I wouldn't say he's hot right now, but he did hit a 398-foot home run against the Rays in beautiful Tropicana Field. So, yeah, Casas, seal the deal for me.
I'm going to take Masa. I'm going to take Masa Yoshida. I don't really have a rhyme or reason. I wanted to take a lefty against the three righties, and God, all of our best players are not hitting home runs. I couldn't pick Casas again. I feel good about your pick, Sammy. So I couldn't pick Casas. I couldn't pick – who did I take this series that I got right?
Casas.
Oh, it was Casas. Okay. Yeah. Then I really couldn't pick Casas. I got a point last time with O'Neill. So I couldn't take Casas or O'Neill. Devers hasn't homered in a long time. Duran hasn't been hitting for power. Willier hasn't really been hitting much. Like, none of these guys. So I just got to go Yoshida and hope he gets one. But, yeah, give me Masa Yoshida. And that's going to take us, Sammy, to your segment. What do you got for us?
Your favorite segment. Everyone's favorite segment where we take a walk down memory lane, especially from me because I'm a time traveler. It's guys being dudes.
Ooh. Yeah, we could use some winning today, Sammy.
We're gonna win this segment. All right, Gordo, I need a player who played for the Boston Red Sox / Minnesota Twins / Washington Senators / Boston Baked Potatoes, whatever they used to be called. All right, who you got?
So I'm not even gonna say Red Sox legend. I normally would do it just to piss you off, but I can't give it.
Abad.
It's not Abad. And like, maybe this is unfair because I feel like there's like a group of people that like weirdly like this guy because he's just really random and like didn't do anything wrong, but he just was not good.
Let me guess. It's just me and you right now. So we got a little extra time. Outfielder?
Not an outfielder. It's going to be tough because he literally only played one career game for the Twins, but it was the only other team he played for in the majors.
Oh, crap.
Okay. He was an infielder. He played for the Red Sox in like the 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019-ish era. It's like he played for the Red Sox when they were good.
Danny Valencia?
Not Danny Valencia. Though he would apply.
I don't know. Tell me.
It is Zhu Wei Lin, who is one of the Red Sox players of all time. He is a World Series champion at that. Played 101 games for the Red Sox, which is probably 101 more games than he should have. He played just one game for the Twins. I don't even think he had an at-bat in that game. But he is such a perfect example of why org depth is so freaking important, because that team, as great as it was like if one guy went down, it's like, all right, we're going to Zhu Wei Lin in the infield. He had a 614 OPS in his career for the Sox. Today, think about it a little bit more. It's like, okay, if guys go down, we go to David Hamilton. He's pretty good. If someone else goes down, I mean, we've got a couple of, you know, we've got two stud infield prospects down on the farm. And Chase Mydroth has had a really good year in AAA. Doesn't strike out, makes tons of contact. And like, he's good. Like, they've got plenty of depth now that, like, if a guy goes down, obviously you don't love when, like, if Trevor Story goes down again, but you got options. Back then, like, if guys went down, they just didn't have options. But good thing the guys were healthy and they won the World Series.
So it's another guy who got to wear the famous number 5.
Yeah, what the hell was that about?
Everyone gets it,
but like, at least like the other guys were like established. Like, a lot of them were free agents that like had major league experience. Like, they had like respect on their name. It's like Zhu Wei Lin was a minor leaguer that had no prospect status or anything. He was obviously just a fill-in. Like, why? Like, why did he not for 79? Like, everyone else gets
that.
He had a weird
number. I actually can't remember what his weird number was. I think it was like 76 or something. And he
graduated that?
Let's see. Zhu Wei Lin. Let's see.
He played like 4 different seasons for the Red Sox. So I guess when you're on your fourth year.
Whoa, he wore number 30 as well? I don't remember that. Wow, this is a tough one.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way. Yeah, wait, he had no at-bats for the Twins. You're right.
He must have just like defensive replacement one day, and then that was that. He was, even Zach Short got got to the plate a couple of times for the Sox this year.
Zach Short, I forgot about that dude already.
We'll use him for guys being dudes next year, but who you got?
All right, you're going to love this one. You know him well. He played for the then Washington Nationals, who became the Senators and then went back to the Nationals and switched their names a few times. And then
they were the Nationals before they were the Senators?
They were like, here, I got it right here. They were the Senators and then the Nationals and then the Senators. And then it looks like they moved to
Montreal. I didn't know they were the Nationals before that, but go on. Tell me who you got.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is weird. Yeah. They bounce back and forth, but I got, you remember him well. He was a pitcher, 5'9", 173 pounds, Bullet Joe Bush, who was cremated in 1974.
It sounds like a president.
He's dead, but he was actually good. So this guy pitched for the Red Sox for actually 4 years, from 1918 to 1921. Listen to these numbers. I don't know how I'd never, like, literally never heard of this guy until earlier today. 3.25 ERA in 110 games, 777.2 innings, and not crazy, but a very, very respectable 108 ERA plus. So pretty good. Pretty good. And 3.25 ERA over that time. Like, this guy was actually, he was actually a pitcher. A lot of these old guys that I pick are schmucks who were terrible. But here's the bad part. Bullet Joe didn't last long. That small frame did not hold up. He went to Washington for one season, a few years after he left the Red Sox. He went to the Yankees, then the Pirates, then Washington, who eventually became the Twins. And he stunk it up in 12 games, 6.69 ERA, 71.1 innings. And wasn't pretty for him. That was a 53 ERA plus. Sorry, 58. Didn't mean to undersell him. But yeah, Bullet Joe Bush, three-time World Series champion, which is pretty cool. And he's actually a good pitcher. Jokes aside, solid. Little guy, but a lot of heart.
Good for Joe Bush. And obviously, big congrats on the cremation, of course.
Yeah, big cremator guy he was. He's currently scattered somewhere.
Gotta love that ash, dude.
Yep, his real name was Leslie Ambrose Bush.
Oh, so way better.
Where Joe came from, but his real name's Leslie Ambrose Bush.
Wow. Well, Sammy, I love to end on a good Leslie Ambrose Bush story, but we're gonna sign off there. Before we do that, just
cremate the episode.
But before we shove it in the cremation, the pizza factory thing, the pizza oven. Big shout out to our producer, Joe Braverman, who, it is his birthday today. So big happy birthday to Joe Braverman, who is forever grinding. This dude is an absolute grinder. He's one of the best things that ever happened to this goddamn show. We love Big Brave. I don't even know if you can hear this because he's doing two things at once on his birthday. So this guy absolutely grinds, and we appreciate Joe so much for producing and putting together videos and just working his ass off for the betterment of this show. So big shouts and happy birthday to Big Joe Braverman. But on that note, we are going to get on out of here, but we will be back in your ears tomorrow for another episode. But before you leave, before you go about your day, do whatever the hell else it is you're doing. Remember, hit that subscribe button, rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. As always, find us on YouTube, on the WEI channel. We've got a Play Testy playlist there. Find all the videos, find all the podcasts there. And as always, on the socials, at Play Testy on both Twitter and Instagram. So for Sammy and for the birthday boy in the back, Joe Braverman, it's Gordo here for Play Testy. Thanks for tuning in. And again, be back tomorrow. Peace.